するぞ。Alright, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and we're about to see some crazy shit. I'm not reading these long scenes. Basically, myself and a bunch of other visual novel enthusiasts agreed that these long fucking scenes are not great. Like, they're not. I don't mind a 10 to 15 minute scene, but these scenes have been going on for 30 minutes or so, 45 minutes, and they're taking us both kind of out. So what I'm going to do is basically go through them, read through them like I did with the last scene, and we'll just read the story parts. I really didn't want to see fucking Sandy with a big ass cock in the Gloria. God damn it. That's like the last thing I wanted to see in this game. Because I like both Gloria and Sandy. Oh, man. Great lines by Sandy's voice actress. Remember, this got an award.
ラーメン飲みやがれ、目つぶってー。
Damn, she reads like she's reading a fucking shonen. Or a saint, and not a saint, but a shoujo, something. Damn. Says Sandy howled like a man. I believe it. Okay. Now then, time to turn this perverted, masochistic sow over to the next in line. Sandy quickly yanked out at the sword, pinning Gloria to the ground. Fragments of flesh and organs spilled from the wound along with a vast pool of blood. Gloria spat up blood again. She couldn't even lift herself up off the filthy floor where her fluids were puddling. She had completely lost all resistance and her limbs only shook and trembled. Oh, that's right. You won't need them for your next training, so I'll go ahead and do something a masochistic sow like you will cry with joy over. A sharp glint returned to Sandy's eyes, her lips curled up in a cruel angle. Then she raised her twin serrated blades and swung them down at the powerless, motionless Gloria. The horrible sound of flesh and bone being severed rang out four times. Sandy's blade sliced each of Gloria's arms and legs off at the base in an instant, turned her into a torso doll. Gloria let out a choked cry of intense pain as fresh blood sprayed from the wounds and stained her skin. However, it was Sandy's excessive violence and mercilessness that drove her to despair more than the pain. She couldn't stop trembling with fear. What? I thought you'd enjoy that more. What a buzzkill. Seeing Gloria dominated by fear, Sandy's eyes rapidly lost their glow of interest. What she sought was only to violate and make the strong Gloria submit. She had no interest whatsoever in a woman that only trembled with terror instead of fighting back. I'll need to go find another pig to train. One with more backbone. Sandy stood up and left like she was abandoning a doll she'd finished playing with after growing sick of it. Have your way with her, were the last words she left behind. The swarm of maggots began undulating their ugly flesh and crawling closer to fill in Sandy's absence. When she realized the tragedy wasn't over, fresh tears of despair spilled from Gloria's eyes. The vile worms spouted distorted human words as they swarmed around her. Tentacles extended from their mass, wrapping around Gloria's body. Oh my god. Holy shit. Man. Though she desperately tried to flee, even as she spewed bubbles of blood, she couldn't crawl very effectively without any arms or legs. She was quickly captured by numerous tentacles, which then bound her torso. Without any limbs, Gloria was just an ugly mass of flesh. She was like string-wrapped ham or fried pork, literally feed for the monsters. The wounds from her amputation were still oozing blood, but she couldn't do anything to close them. The hideous monsters bound her body tight with their fleshy whips as if they were going to drain her blood even further. Gloria pleaded with the nauseating monsters. The very act proved that her pride didn't have a shred of resistance remaining. Perhaps it should have been expected that the maggots refused to listen to any of it. The young girl pleaded with tears in her eyes, but the tentacles only tightened their grip around her. Their fleshy masses rippled with excitement as they sprouted thick tendrils resembling dicks. The vile wart-covered tentacles were designed for breeding. Even as she bled out, Gloria twisted her inhibited body to try and escape. Cruelly enough, okay, now it's going into the thing. So, cruelly enough, the maggot's huge tentacles encircled her crotch. There were two of them, and each was aiming for one of her holes. Okay. You see how they're just overloading us with age scenes now? And the most fucked up ones, too. These are definitely the most fucked up scenes in the game. It's almost like they give you a safe path with the Red Harvest ending, and then they're like, well, if you're a real masochist, you can play Ashes and Diamonds. Okay. To Matsumoro Serika, her mother was a curse. The moment her husband of many years died, or more precisely, the moment that event delivered a large unexpected insurance payout into her hands, was when her mother began her fall. Hold on, let's check the, 84. We're getting there. The surprise influx of fortune unbalanced and destroyed the financial sense of the average house of that average housewife. It started with her commuting to pachinko parlors and spending money recklessly. But what cemented her downfall was when she got hooked on playing with men. She started taking on debt and credit card loans to pay off her tabs with hosts, and once she got put on blacklist, she stooped to high-interest loan sharks. Even after all that, she started continuing visiting hosts or hitting pachinko parlors. It was as if she completely changed as a person when her husband died and she obtained that money. Perhaps she was always a sinful, profligate woman, and it was merely hidden under how naive and submissive a housewife she was. After that, she couldn't pay the inflating interest, and she'd flee time after time in the night to escape the debtors closing in. Since Erica lived with her, she was forced to drop out of the school she enjoyed attending. She never did understand why she just didn't leave her mother behind and run away. It certainly wasn't love. She ran out of that a long time ago. Resignation because they were blood-related? That wasn't it either. She had to say it was her warped sense of self-respect. If she abandoned that middle-aged woman being crushed under debt, then that would be silently admitting she wasn't a better person than she thought. Money robbed her of her sanity, lifestyle, and upbringing. It was something Serika couldn't stand. Money had wreaked havoc on her life, so she vowed not to lose anything more until she regained what it had taken. She fled with her mother to Kanto's pandemonium in order to hide themselves from the Yakuza collectors coming for them. It was a lawless city that wouldn't punish anyone for doing whatever it took to live. Here in this vile city, Serika realized her life's goal and ambition, to strike it rich, to reclaim her life with money. She did whatever it took thanks to her adaptability and quickness to act. She recorded hardcore footage of the witches' orgies and sold it abroad to raise money. She even dabbled in smuggling illegal drugs into the country. However, everything she earned was consumed by the debt her mother earned from men in pachinko parlors, even in the city. Truthfully, there were plenty of times she seriously wanted to kill her mother, but doing so would only mean her own defeat. That's why she was her curse. She felt like she was at a dead end. But that's when she found Tsunaga Shogo on a street corner. He was a queer stranger accompanied by a witch. There was a strong smell of violence about him, which in the city often meant money. Serika quickly approached him and pitched herself as an information broker. She had always been great with her social skills. After she was hired, she learned about Tsunaga's objective. It was a dangerous and outrageous idea, but Serika thought it was worth betting on. As Tsunaga managed to defeat the forces actually controlling the city, the power balance in Kanto's pandemonium would chaotically shift. If she managed to get her hooks into that flow, it was even possible she could emerge as one of the city's new rulers. Even if it didn't work out that well, she could still take advantage of the chaos to snatch up more money than she ever would have seen in her life outside this place. Either way, she was positive that this was a chance to turn her life around. Now then, hope you handle it well, Tsunaga-san. Oh, so it's Tsunaga. Okay, so I've been saying it wrong. Whatever. She was bringing food to her mother before the meeting they had planned that night. She hopped into the apartment elevator like usual and headed to the room at the end of the fourth floor. Hey, shitbag, you alive? Once she entered, a foul odor pricked her nose. Her mother probably hadn't cleaned out the stink again. Serika walked into the room a little fed up with her. I bought you dumplings and yakisoba. You like them, right? Eat before they get cold. Her mother didn't respond. She could hear the faint sound of the television coming from behind the living room door. Mother? She opened the living room door and grew faint. There was a thick smell of iron. A fatty mass of meat lay on the floor in a shabby sweatshirt. Despite her age, her hair was dyed a gaudy color, but now it was soiled by some kind of red mud. Several men were standing around it, filling up the cramped living room. Their corrupt, sharp gazes were pinned on the frozen Serika. They were putting off such an intense aura of violence and wickedness that her legs nearly gave out just from their stares. Finally, she realized the mass on the floor was her mother's corpse with a shattered cranium. Welcome home, little Serika-chan. The man sitting down in her mother's chair turned away from the TV screen he was watching to sneer at her. He was holding an iron crowbar dyed with fresh blood. Shit! The moment she caught on that they knew about her, she turned tail and ran for the entrance. That was when she heard the sound of the toilet flushing as another man emerged from the door right beside her. The timing was so awful that her heart nearly stopped in shock and fear. She tried to run past him, but he seized her arm from the side. Let go! She flailed around in a panic, but she couldn't really move. She remembered that she carried a stun gun in her pocket, but it was already too late. The other men had caught up to her, grabbed her, and were now dragging her back. Serika was keenly aware of the danger to her life thanks to the choking smell of her mother's blood. Her visual senses were heightened on instinct, and she vividly memorized the face of every man swarming around with blatant lust. She started to call for help, but she quickly realized how futile that would be and swallowed her words instead. Even if her screams did reach someone outside, who in this vile city would ever rescue her? Now, just behave. Let's get along here. The brawny man seized Serika and shoved her down onto the floor. Ah, mother! Her mother's corpse was lying right in front of her eyes. Brain matter spilled from her cracked cranium and the foul odor pricked her nose. She was the worst kind of mother for her child, but she still didn't deserve to be murdered like that, let alone by complete strangers. Your precious mama's already dead, so don't worry about her. You people! Serika glared at the men with tears in her eyes, even as they held her down. She flailed her legs too, trying to kick them. Her mother was the one murdered, but it was still a desecration of Serika's dignity. She couldn't forgive them, rage and hatred welling up within her. That's more like it. I love fooling around with strong-willed girls like you. Well, you'll fall in line quickly once we inject you with this. The man pulled out a filled syringe. What is that? Stop it! Serika couldn't fight back with them holding her down as they injected her butt. She let out a groan from the sharp pain. We're making sure you enjoy this too. Be grateful for it. The man continued to hold Serika down on all fours, then he pulled out his erect dick. Let me go. Don't bring that filthy thing near me. dirty prick, a dick. Just kidding. Here we go. And then he grinded his hot, thick shaft in between her sensitive folds. Ooh. Okay, we're just gonna read this. Yeah, she's a virgin. Of course, she says, I wasn't planning on giving it to any of you. Ah, oh, what a waste killing the hag was. I always wanted to try fucking a mom and her daughter. Said, Masami-san, you always get so excited and kill too much. Doing her in with a single crowbar to the head. You're not a street slasher. Just shut up. Said, she couldn't even talk back after her mother was murdered and she was even robbed of her chastity. The regret pulled in Serica's eyes as tears. She hated it, but she couldn't resist. She could only let them violate and have their way with her. But just as she thought that... Okay. Now here comes the pleasure. Even though these people she hated were violating her, she felt like those feelings would be erased in the swirl of pink thoughts filling her mind. It's kicking in now. A drug to make you feel good. That was a free dose, so don't worry about payment. Yeah, they just injected her with the maggot stuff. Yeah, her mother was murdered, she was being raped, and she might even die after this too. Still, the pleasure she felt was crowding out even those thoughts of danger. In her confusion, she hoped to rely on her mother. She turned her eyes toward her fallen mother and screamed to resist the pleasure being driven into her. Duh, you miss your mommy? Then we'll let you suck on this in place of your mommy's tits, okay? Oh my god. Fucking assholes, right? Make sure you suck it with love like you would your mommy's tits. If you bite it, then you'll be going straight to mommy, got it? No more mommy, but there's still a lolly, right? What the fuck? Aha, that's super dumb. The eyes of the man fucking Serica's mouth weren't smiling. He was definitely ready to kill her like her mother if she resisted. She didn't want to be murdered after being disgraced like this. If that happened, then what was the point of anything in her life? That's a good girl. If you do as you're told, then we'll make sure you enjoy this. After the man getting his dick sucked off gave her a satisfied grin, he began thrusting his hips and fucking Serica's mouth like it was a flashlight. She found herself pathetic for being unable to fight back and fearing for her life. Even as Serica cried, she endured her rape, getting fucked from behind on all fours while disgracefully getting face fucked. However, the more she endured, the stronger her pleasure grew. Oh, you gotta stop coming inside them on the first go. Keep our public toilets clean, you know? That's another guy. So basically, they're gonna inject her with a dose so high that it might break her mind. But they don't care because it's not their problem. She was likely to be killed after they raped her so thoroughly, so the men were right. It was better to feel good since it was going to happen anyway. She wanted to continue succumbing to hedonism. Serka passed out completely while still tripping on the drugs. Her cum-stained face wore a loose smile, and she continued to mutter slurred words. She's saying more, lots more in my pussy. Give me more dick. A mix of drool and cum dangled from Serka's lips as she crawled towards the man in charge, and since he'd already unleashed plenty of his desire, all he felt was disgust and hatred towards her. You're gross! Don't touch me, cum bitch! He kicked her hard with the sole of his foot. She let out a stupid scream and flipped over, exposing her genitals overflowing with cum. Her pussy let out a loud, sharp queef as the air inside escaped. What do we do with her? The men dispatched to Serka's home were among the lowest members of those on the Witch Hunter Project. They were only gathered together to perform this one job. The fact that such a group was left in charge of dealing with Serka meant they placed hardly any value on her. Their true objective, the base where Tsunaga Shogo was holed up, was long identified by the fact that Serka was seen coming and going from it. An elite squad of mercenaries should have already been on its way there by now. Therefore, there was no information to be gained from her. Or no more information to be gained from her. Their only objective was to punish her for cooperating with Tsunaga. Or Tsunaga. Yeah, it's Tsunaga. She's gross and she kind of pisses me off. Let's just kill her. The man spat, picking up the very same crowbar used to bludgeon her mother to death. Hostility saturated the air. Serka's instincts were quick to pick up on it, bringing her back from her escape into the drug's intoxication for a moment. Stop! Don't kill me! I'll do anything! She couldn't stop herself from begging for her life, even though she knew that that would just make the men happier. As expected, the features on the men broke down. They had just obtained the ultimate plaything. So sorry, we're going to kill you. The man took careful aim at Serka and slammed the crowbar into the wall, nicking her face. The loud sound echoing in the room conveyed plenty about the weapon's weight, destructiveness, and the ruthless power when swinging it. Serka's lungs contracted in fear, and the moment that expelled air turned into a screaming cry. An inappropriate electric tone went off. Some visitor had pressed the button on the intercom outside the door. The men exchanged looks. This wasn't the kind of city where cops would show up over a commotion. The only thing they could think of was a neighbor coming to rage about the noise. The man with sunglasses who was closest to the entryway pulled a handgun out of his pants. The glistening stainless steel revolver was a Colt King Cobra. If you're making sales, we're not interested! After that strange shout, he opened fire at the entrance door. The 357 S&W Magnum bullet was said to be able to puncture car engines, so it opened a hole through the metal door like it was cardboard. He ruthlessly continued firing all six shots with its double-action system. After the revolver had fired off all of its bullets, steam rose from the heated barrel, as if it was satisfied. The intercom stopped ringing. The irritating smell of gun smoke hung thick in the air of the room. Nearly everyone's eardrums were numb from the roar of the Magnum. That was when the sash window on the veranda opened unexpectedly. Everyone in the room was caught completely unaware, their thoughts and actions froze entirely. A well-built, middle-aged man entered the room from the open window. The unexpected visitor had used the time while they were opening fire to go around to the veranda via the outer wall around, along this room at the end of the walkway. The man closest to the infiltrator, Ego Nobutake, finally reacted. Oh yeah, this is Ego Nobutake. Okay. The moment he tried to pull his handgun out of his pocket, Ego seized his arm and collar with an agility that belied his age. He then sank his weight low and threw him straight down with a powerful grip using a kneeling shoulder drop. The man flew in a short arc before his head slammed into the floor, his own weight snapping in his cervical vertebrae and killing him instantly. The automatic pistol that fell from his grasp, a Glock 17, was quickly picked up by Ego as he stood up. With perfectly calm motions, he pulled back the slide and loaded the chamber. Then he turned and fired at the assailants. Explosions echoed in succession like a firecracker going off in the apartment room. Two men were reduced to falling blood sacks while the golden shells fluttered to the floor. Who the hell are you? The leader holding the crowbar was the last one standing. He was no longer the ruler tyrannically reigning over the room. His face lost its composure, revealing his panic. Me? Ego felt silent at his query, giving it a genuine moment of thought. I'm just an old cleaner, starting today. Ego proclaimed his title to the man frozen before his muzzle. Then with a sudden thought, he set the Glock down beside him on the table. I always thought I didn't have his qualifications to fight after I ran away from the battle I should have faced, at least until yesterday. The man's eyes changed now that Ego was unarmed. He rushed forward, crowbar in hand, and swinging it with a sharp force. Ego parried the swing and stepped in close, seizing his lapels and turning to catch the man's left arm and entering the stance for a one-armed shoulder throw. The man with the crowbar caught on and dropped his hips back to try and prevent Ego's throw. However, that was all part of Ego's plan. He instantly changed the vector of his strength, pressing his weight down on the man instead. He used the man's attempt to brace himself backward to offset his balance. Ego then threw a leg sweep that caught his knees in a risky inner wraparound throw, pushing the man down forward along with his own body. Once they were entangled on the floor, Ego transitioned straight into a pin where he was caught hold of his opponent's left arm as the man tried to rise, sealing it into a back-lying perpendicular armbar. With perfect timing, he instantly stretched the man's elbow ligaments taut and dislocated the joint. Ego looked down at the man screaming in agony. He then released his hold and stood up. But then I realized that didn't matter, as I watched Shogo's lack of indecision. Ego continued speaking flatly to no one in particular as he quickly subjugated the ruffian. He once again retrieved the Glock off the table. I can debate all I want, but this rotten city continues to exist, and the guys who caused that incident continue to have their way. It's just a matter of what I want to do about it. So I've decided to fight, for now. I'm starting by cleaning up trash like you all. When Sarika heard him mention Tsunaga's name, she was stupefied. Mister, are you Tsunaga-san? Well, it is Tsunaga, whatever. It's Sarika. Oh shit. See, I sometimes get them wrong. It's Sarika. Yeah, I'm an old acquaintance of his. You're Matsumoro Sarika-san, right? I heard you were allied with Shogo. I want to know where he is right now, so I came looking for your residence. But before we get to that, Ego lifts Sarika up with care and put the Glock in her hands. Her gaze was focused on the man groaning as he cradled his arm. Point the muzzle at him and pull the trigger. That was your mother, right? Killed by these guys? Ego pulled a cigarette out of his pack, not his mouth, while motioning at the corpse in the living room with his chin. As Sarika stared at the gun's polymer frame, she finally felt the emotions justified by the violation and loss she went through, hatred and anger. Wounds inflicted by violence can only be sealed with violence. People often say that stooping to their level won't bring justice, but that's a lie. Don't be Batman. It's just a convenient myth to help uphold the honor of a law-abiding society. If we were outside of this city, then the violence of the law might be able to exact your revenge for you. Right now, you're the only one who can heal your wound. He lit his cigarette with a 100-yen lighter, breathing in the smoke and its heavy nicotine. His eyes were telling her to do it. As if ensorcelled by his eyes, Sarika pointed the muzzle of the Glock at the crowbar man. He's just called the crowbar man now. She held her breath and squeezed the trigger. The gun fired off, knocking Sarika back from the muzzle's kickback. Well, yeah. Her bullet missed, shattering a shaded lamp in the room. Ego held her thin arms and guided her on how to do it properly. Are you right-handed? Then you don't need to put force into the hand pulling the trigger. Just focus on holding it in your right hand, but in turn, squeeze it tight with your left. That'll help reduce the shake of your muzzle. Don't extend your elbows, keep them slightly bent. So long as you hold the gun tight, you shouldn't miss at this range. She fired again, and this time she hit. The bullet pierced his left thigh and dug into his ass. The man groaned and sobbed as blood trailed from him. Sarika started to regain her strong confidence as she stared at the sight. The rousing emotion she felt were rekindling her formerly dead eyes. Sarika choked out a scream and pulled the trigger of the Glock repeatedly. The numerous roars numbed the air and dense gun smoke filled the apartment room. The violent leader had long died amidst the gunfire. Now he was a sack of flesh full of bright red holes with half his face blown off. Sarika didn't understand it herself, but tears spilled from her eyes. Ego silently puffed at his cigarette while the young girl beside him began loudly crying like a child. With the coming of dawn, birds began to sing amongst the trees. There was a freezing chill to the mountain air at first light, and sunlight was reluctantly beginning to shine through the canopy. The color of the sky was changing with majestic certainty and slowness, a transition from an inky black hue of death to an opal hue until a pale, soft blue permeated it. The skies were clear. As time passed, that blue would grow deeper and richer. As the morning mist began to clear, the evening dew was left behind on the forest undergrowth. A section of that undergrowth was soaked with abundant human blood. The splatters of crimson were scattered across tree trunks in the grove like someone had sprayed it randomly from a hose. That was the mark left behind from the deadly duel between those two men. They made this untouched bit of nature seem like the site of a solemn, holy ritual. It was likely that the ritual was meant to come to its end with the death of both sides, but right now that final call was about to be made. Tsunaga Shogo or Brian McElmale? Both men had collapsed in a heap, lying right beside each other. The sight was almost like a scene from a tale of friendship. But of course, there was no friendship between them. Only the final end brought about by polar opposite savages existed here. In fact, the sight was a vivid depiction of the ferocity of their battle as they dredged up every last desperate effort. After persistently firing their bullets, they bared their blades and then slammed their fists into one another. It was a destructive fight full of hatred and malice to silence the individual before them as they shaved away at each other's flesh and bone. In this final moment of their battle, neither of them... Ooh, looks like we were missing something. Ooh, we got some cut text. I'll look at it in the backlog. In this final moment of their battle, neither of them had the strength left to support their own weight. They had drawn closer by necessity, beating and supporting each other as they fell on top of one another. They had grabbed each other's hair and clothes, and even after they fell to the ground, they crawled to each other like monads, reaching their hands out for each other's throat and eyes. It was a dirty, messy... Okay. We're missing some things, guys. I don't know what happened. Weird. At long last, the moment came where they'd expended every drop of energy from their selves. Oddly enough, they both reached that point at the same time. Their duel to the death ultimately never provided a clear conclusion. No. It seems I wasn't able to die. Sorry, but this is my victory. His complexion was like corpse wax, as pallid as an actual body. Regardless, a twisted smile formed on Brian's lips. Dozens of Gurkha knife wounds were gouged into his body, and his intestines were spilling out of a huge hole ripped in his stomach. But one mustn't forget, this man's immortality wasn't supported solely by his own life force. Even at this very moment, one could glimpse the repulsive squirming of countless maggots within his body moving to seal his wounds. Eventually, his wounds would regenerate, and this man would be revived like a god of death. You can have the victory. Meanwhile, Tsunaga's body was riddled with bullet holes. Even so, he continued fighting while ignoring the pain. He displayed an overwhelming tenacity toward the battle on par with an Asura. Even now, with his body fading fast, emotion still burned strong within his eyes. However, I still have things to do. He muttered with a raspy groan before trying to move his dying body. He wasn't even able to stand at that point. His skin was so pale that it was transparent. He'd lost far too much blood. His heartbeat was only growing fainter, and his heart was likely to stop completely before a few hours were up. Stop it. There's no reason to prolong your suffering. I can't. Tsunaga glared at the brightening sky and gritted his teeth. His voice and face were clearly brimming with attachment to life and the strong spirit to reject death. As Brian watched him from the side, a light flickered on in his withered eyes as if he were looking far into the distance. I see. Neither of us were able to end it like this. He muttered, his voice was quiet as if he made some hard decision. If I could give you the power to heal those wounds and rise once more, what would you do? What did you say? Tsunaga glanced to the side at Brian, eyes filled with madness. The craving within his bloodshot eyes was awaiting Brian's next words. I'll give you a portion of the nest of maggots I'm raising in my body. If you take those monster cells in as parasites, they'll heal those wounds for you. However, once you do, a greater hell than this awaits. You're different. You haven't had Shimon's black magic cast on you. There's no way you'll remain untouched if you do it. The maggots will devour your brain. You'll lose your mind and your body will eventually be assimilated and transformed. You won't be able to remain human anymore. Tsunaga stared speechless for a moment at those words, but... I don't care. Give them to me. It only took a second or two. There was no hesitation in his quick response. Even if it means you cease to be human and devolve into one of those maggot monsters, is there any meaning to the future you hope to gain after going to those lengths? You talk like I need a future. I abandoned that long ago. All I want is to get her back. Tsunaga spat his thoughts despite his hazy mind. Those were the irreplaceable emotions deep within that drove him while he was dying. The sight of Carol brutally cut apart and captured by that witch Sandy was burned into his eyes. He didn't have the strength left to stop her as she flew away far above his head when he'd lost the ability to even stand. She is my tool, my weapon. I decided only I would be the one to use her up. His words only spoke of the callous master-servant relationship between them, but it showed Tsunaga's honor as her owner. However, at this moment, Tsunaga longed to reclaim that witch with even greater passion than he voiced. The origin of those emotions lay long in the past. When he longed to find someone to protect within that hell, he met an unfamiliar, unnamed girl who met her final moments in despair. Within Tsunaga's mind, the living and dead had overlapped. If he was able to rescue Carol from the clutches of death within this helpless situation, but the moment he reached that conclusion, Tsunaga wanted to scoff at his ridiculousness. That was stupid. That was the past, and the dead were dead. Rescuing Carol now wouldn't bring any joy to those who died in the past. In fact, it was more of a blasphemy towards them. It was a self-satisfying superposition that ultimately held no meaning. Rescuing Carol now and atoning for his past were completely separate. He is willing to accept that folly, but... I want to do it. I want to reclaim Carol with my own hands. It didn't matter if it was just self-satisfaction. Once he decided to do it, he would achieve it. His entire life had been a repetition of that cycle. Even if it was pointless, his desire to reclaim Carol was a basic truth. Desire to control, desire to protect, maybe even love. Whatever this pain tearing at his soul may be called, it didn't matter. Here I wondered why, but it's all for a woman. Brian heaved a derisive sigh as he listened. You're a more boring man than I thought. Disappointed? Brian let out a little laugh as he disagreed. There was an age when I was a boring man like that too. Now I just hate you for making me remember those shitty memories. Brian's mind began replaying his past after those unprompted remarks. Wow, it looks like we're about to go into Brian's story, which is very interesting. I didn't think we were going to get everybody's backstory, but we are getting the backstories now, which seems to be what this whole path is about. My homeland was a place cursed by the blood of the past. Northern Ireland, the British Commonwealth, was a powder keg packed with conflict, discrimination, and hatred all knotted up over race, class, and religion. Thanks to that, rebellions, bloodshed, and other troubles remained constant for ages, and those sparks exploded into the Irish War of Independence in the 20th century. Although the political problems were eventually resolved on the surface, hatred and grudges were too ingrained into the land and people living there. That's part of why it's said to be a curse no one could resolve. The Irish Republican Army, IRA, an armed group of men that spawned many factions of various sizes, was also involved in the anti-government movement. Brian McCompale had been an average young man and living in the countryside of northeast Ulster. Although he was an average man, he was influenced by the traditions and ethos of that blood-cursed land. Eventually, he found himself caught up in the anti-government movement. I only ever wanted to live a peaceful life with my wife. The only reason I joined the movement was to show my face at meetings and avoid being ostracized. I wasn't some terrorist. However, Brian drew the attention of officials. He was tortured in a police cell and coerced to confess to the plans his fellow extremists had made to acquire arms. I held out. They ripped all the... I held out. They ripped all the nails from my hands and feet, and I still didn't talk after a gay cop violated me. Ouch. Damn. If I sold my colleagues out, my wife and I wouldn't be able to live there anymore. My wife loved her homeland, you know, so I endured it all to preserve her happiness. He was finally released after enduring over a week of torture. Naturally, the first place that the wounded Brian headed was home to his wife. There, I found my wife constantly being raped by my colleagues. They thought I had betrayed them the minute the cops picked me up. My colleagues often took me lightly since I hated conflict. His dry, swampy eyes shook with a mad light. No, they used that as an excuse to have fun venting their anger. Once I was labeled a traitor, they were free to do whatever they wanted with my wife. It was a small town. Good and evil could both pass under the protection of authority or the masses. So, what did you do? That night, I murdered every last one of them. The first one I murdered was my own wife. Brian spoke without any emotion in his withered voice. I'd sworn so strongly to protect her, you know. Still, I thought I couldn't love a tainted woman anymore, so I abandoned both my love and myself. That was the end of the human Brian McCompale, as well as the birth of a maggot with nothing left to protect. Afterward, Brian left his homeland. He made contact with the IRA extremists in Belfast, and they welcomed him into the group. He was praised as an indomitable warrior for his heroic tale of enduring the officials' torture, and then he underwent combat training to become an elite soldier at a camp in northern Africa. As Brian gained renown as a terrorist... Renown? Okay, I guess that works there. Word of his past incident also spread within the organization. He was a loathed traitor, even among villains and scoundrels. That was no exception in the world of terrorists. And that's how I became an ally-killing traitor driven out of the organization. Sorry for the wait. I should do it now. With a short pause of weariness after telling his tale, he slowly dragged a creepy mass of flesh from his torn stomach. The huge maggot or slug-like thing let out a disgusting scream from a human-like mouth. After getting a firm grasp on it, he pressed it into Sunaga's chest. Eyeballs and tentacles sprouted from the mass, and it dove into Sunaga's wounds like it was running from the sun. Although Sunaga's expression never changed due to pain as he lay dying, he was now groaning in agony. Relax. Once it's in, it'll do the rest for you. It'll repair the cracks in its new home. The entire maggot slipped into Sunaga's stomach. His labored breathing continued for a while, but the pain steadily began to fade from his stiff body. The gunshot wounds he bore here and there were rapidly sealing up with some kind of special effect you'd see in a movie. I didn't lie to you, right? Yeah. Looks that way. Not only were his wounds healing, his body was regaining the strength to stand. Sunaga's eyes went wide with surprise. The next moment, he felt intense nausea. Vomit splattered onto the grass, but an oddly colored, foul-smelling liquid was mixed in. The moment Sunaga saw it, he realized the truth. His body was no longer being operated solely by the life force he was born with as a human. With every passing second, he was turning into some other creature. Now get going. Get out of here. I'm sick of looking at your face. Brian looked up at the standing Sunaga once and then warily closed his eyes. You have my gratitude. I doubt we'll ever get a chance to meet again, though. Farewell, Brian McAmail. With one last glance at his rival lying on the grass, Sunaga's broad shoulders began walking away, one-way ticket to hell in hand. Brian silently saw him off. Once he could no longer hear the fading footsteps, Brian opened his closed eyelids. Yeah, that's right. We'll never meet again. What I gave you was the core of the maggot nest. Transferring a clipping wouldn't have been enough to heal those deep wounds. The shadow of death was rapidly falling thickly over Brian's face. He had already passed the source of his healing to Sunaga, and nothing remained for the lethal wounds he'd already sustained. However, there was an odd look of satisfaction on his face as he lay there dying. The light was fading from his swampy eyes like an exhausted child falling to sleep. Yet somehow, I managed to meet a good end, I think. Now it's your turn, Sunaga Shogo. With that name on his lips and the dawn reflected in his eyes, Brian McAmail expired. While he was descending the mountain, Sunaga caught sight of a light pink flash overhead. It was a witch in flight. Judging from her direction, she was coming from the mansion. Once Allison recognized the sight of Sunaga, she swooped down to the ground. Thank goodness, thank goodness. Looks like you're safe. You're coming with me? Yeah, I'm gonna fight too. This time, but Allison swallowed those words and nodded. She felt safe with Sunaga, and her courage was beginning to sprout. Even if she was still a coward by herself, she was positive she could give her best if someone was with her. Tears spilled from her big eyes as she hugged Sunaga's waist like she had before. Instantly, her young expression tensed and froze. She released Sunaga and looked up at him with fright in her eyes. What's the matter? No, it's nothing. Allison kept quiet and shook her head. She must have been imagining it. The moment she touched Sunaga's body, an awful, repulsive sensation had caressed her own. It was like some instinctive revulsion. It was almost exactly the same thing she felt when spotting those creatures. Let's go. Seneca began walking toward the city at the foot of the mountain once more, with Allison walking behind, following behind, rather. Their destination was known as Slumville, the heart of the evil swirling around in this city. The cruel fate of the witches and one man was now moving towards its final stages. What the fuck? I can't believe what I'm watching. This is fucking crazy. What the fuck? I'm sorry, I'm actually kind of laughing. It's just too bizarre and over the top. Like, somebody's gotta be laughing when they're doing this shit. There's got to be. There's no way they're doing this serious. There's no way there's somebody drawing this shit and thinking about this shit seriously. They are fucking laughing. They're a bunch of Japanese guys at a bar, and they've probably, you know, got their drinks in their hand and say, hey, I got this crazy idea. And all the other guys are just laughing their asses off. Yeah, let's put that in the game. There's nobody that jumped up and said, oh, we're really going to seriously do, like, we're going to make this a serious, like, big deal scene. No. This is just some funny shit they put in the game. It's so over the top and ridiculous, you can't take it seriously. Like, you literally can't take it seriously. This is one of the craziest fucking things I've ever seen. Because, you know, those are, like, severed limbs, and they've got false, fake limbs that look like cow legs. And they basically, it's like, what the fuck? They gave her a little nose ring like a cow and a, well, like a bull. And they gave her a bell and, oh my, it's so fucking ridiculous. She has horns, so I guess they thought, oh, she's like a bull or a cow. This beef toilet is too hot. It's so ridiculous. Oh, this is a great cow toilet, he says. You're a cow, so why are you oinking like a pig? That's funny. Ah, you're really calling yourself that? Then you should suck my cock like a pig, greedily eating feed and milk it dry. Okay, now this is going on a little bit too fucking long. Come on now. I can't wait to get the staff comments, because I want to see if they have anything to say about some of these. Oh my god. Need we go further? Gloria, an LCD tablet was pushed into the cell. The cold mechanical screen had just finished replaying the degraded, maddened state of her former comrade. The ferocious witch Gloria, there wasn't a fragment of that brave, spirited, heroic figure left. Her appearance and her bulging, pregnant belly weren't the only things that had changed. If an unknowing outsider was shown that footage, they would only believe her to be a true deviant, indulging in her sexual perversions. They think the woman being shown was always a hopeless animal, a favorite of normal sex acts. However, that wasn't true. She wasn't like that mere days ago. It was difficult to even imagine what had happened to her in the time since her capture. She'd changed extensively. It's almost like she'd been changed into a different person. Gloria was no longer the same woman Carol knew. That much was clear, even just from the footage. There wasn't a shred left of the fighting spirit and strong ego that made Gloria who she was. It had already been completely shattered by some manner of overwhelming force. She must have fought against that power and faced utter defeat, likely while wagering something that was most precious to her. Perhaps the handholds to keep mankind human are more fragile than a single strand of hair. Those who have had that taken away lose their resilience and fall like they're drawn down by gravity. They lose the ability to maintain an outline of who they imagine themselves to be, almost as if it was their original natural state of being. It's hard to believe otherwise when faced with Gloria's all-too-dramatic transformation. She couldn't save Gloria any longer, and she felt disappointment at her former comrade's fall, shaving off a definite chunk of the solid willpower supporting herself. At the same time, as if they had recognized the mental change in Carol, the door to her cell was unlocked with a stiff sound. The cold grasp of tension and fear seized her guts. Hey, Carol, how'd you like Gloria's reduction to cattle? Sandy was the one who entered her cell. That sinful, abominable, traitorous woman who captured her fellow witches and tortured them to death. She looked happy, didn't she? Once you abandon... Oh, damn. Once you abandon all the bothersome stuff, humans can easily do the same. Hey, you should follow suit soon. You'll never get out of here, no matter what happens, so struggling's just a waste of time. Still, Sandy herself seemed to enjoy playing that role. There was no way to tell if that attitude was just part of her nature or something that changed after the fact. I won't lose. She stared back at the haughty, tattooed woman defiantly. As long as I survive, Shogo will come here for me. I need to be useful to him when he does. She spoke back, holding tightly to the handhold, resisting deepest within her. Resting. Resting. She spoke back, holding tightly to the handhold, resting deepest within her. I'll endure anything you do to me until then. She had been saying that since they met, though she had no basis to support it. She felt like she could endure anything by focusing on that. At the same time, it gave her a deep, certain peace. To Carol and the others, Kanto's pandemonium was the world. In truth, they knew nothing outside of it. To them, the world was a disorderly labyrinth filled with chaos, vulgar humans squirming around, and hostile traps light here and there. They were thrust into the midst of all that and told to live without a reason. Many witches had no choice but to merge themselves with the violence of combat and excitement of lust in order to shake off their fear and confusion. Even though Carol didn't join them, she understood the feeling. That which is born must live. They were all dropped into this gap between worlds with that cruel, irresponsible treatment. They couldn't even decide a path forward for themselves without some kind of handhold. If they never managed to find one, they'd constantly be stuck wandering in circles with nowhere to go. Maybe that's not something limited to witches, though. However, Carol was different, because of Tsunaga Shogo. For whatever reason, she always had his light at the center of her cruel world. That savage, callous Avenger gave her a handhold to live on. There was all the more reason for Carol to find satisfaction and meaning in following Tsunaga Shogo, and made shaving away at herself for him feel comforting. She could truly believe with all her heart that she was doing something right and meaningful. However, she couldn't distinguish whether that feeling was different from simple affection for another. The question Serica posed to her once before was one that she answered honestly. But now she was apart from Tsunaga, it was true that she felt pain. It was almost like she was being ripped apart. Perhaps that itself wasn't part of being in love, but Carol couldn't neither affirm nor deny it. She didn't think about categorizing her emotions as love or something different. She didn't feel like there was really much point to that act. Not so long as her heart valued someone else more than herself, not so long as that remained her strong foundation. Christ, you're so devoted. Well, so long as your beloved man still lives. That was when Carol noticed a new LCD tablet in Sandy's hands. It was the same type of terminal that had just been displaying Gloria's slutty state in detail. An unsettled, ominous feeling rolled over her like rain clouds. Yeah, it's a new recording. This one's incredible, too. Sandy saw through Carol's reaction and gave her a sneer brimming with vile intentions. Once you watch this, you'll realize it too. Any struggle you put up is futile. Let's watch it together. Come on. Sandy began playing the footage. A familiar voice played over the speakers. It was Wilma, oinking like an ugly pig. Ah, so they're doing the same with Wilma. We'll go through it real quick. There's a single woman with her face thrusted towards the floor, licking an empty plate placed on the ground like a pig. Okay. Not just like a pig, she truly was a pig. She had fake pig legs, matching ears, a vibe tail shoved in her ass, and a hook dug into her nose. Her big protruding belly bulged out like a real pig's. It had swollen to that state because a maggot seeded and impregnated her, and it looked like her delivery date wasn't far off. Okay, so here we go. And yeah, this is just really kind of stupid, honestly. I mean, it is. It's like joke scenes. They really are just joke scenes. I'm sorry. Like, you're like, oh, this is torture. No, it's the point of just joke. Like, I'm literally laughing. This is ridiculous. Like, anybody that's like, oh my god! Like, yeah. You really gotta get a life. Cause, like, if you can't understand that this is fucking humor. Like, that's total fucking humor. That's like GWAR humor. I'm sorry, that's the... I grew up with Guar, folks. I'm sorry. This shit, nothing. And there's another band out there back in the day called, Dick Delicious and the Tasty Testicles. That kind of shit. Like, a lot of people just don't really understand, you know, there was Anal Cunt and all this kind of crazy shit. Even Slipknot, members of Slipknot played an Anal Blast, which was a band like that with real fucked up lyrics and shit. So you hear this shit, and it's like, eh. You almost wonder if the Japanese people that made this shit actually listen to that kind of stuff, because I know they had a bunch of crazy shit in Japan, for sure. And these guys, they just get paid to fuck them. I guess they do, because they're always there. Well, he came, but he'll probably come like 3 or 4 more fucking times, because this game doesn't know when to quit. Okay. Even Wilma. Carol's heart was crushed by grief. It was an elegy for the humanity Wilma had already lost. Not a shred of the sagacity. I've never heard that word, but that's a good one. Not a shred of the sagacity she once bore remained in the image of that woman who had lost her human limbs and accepted her place as livestock. The world her jade eyes now viewed was completely different from the one she watched before. I can't believe it. Our Wilma. The mutter that escaped her lips came from knowing the same Wilma just a few days ago. Carol was captured at the same time and imprisoned in this den of thieves alongside her. Unlike Gloria, who was already shown signs of mental breakdown by the time of her capture, Wilma had retained plenty of her faculties. In fact, she was even more stout-hearted than Carol. Carol had already shown considerable exhaustion from the first rate she experienced here. The maggot's tentacle assault had been filled with clearly repulsive agony. However, it wasn't hyperbole to say that it was only a test run when it came to abusing witches. Even so, that alone was something Carol struggled to bear. After all, she'd never given herself to save Tsunaga, or Tsunaga rather, so the mental damage she suffered from being raped continued to linger. Wilma was the one who encouraged her afterward. No matter how powerless you are, no matter how much they have their way with your body, no one can touch your heart and mind. So long as we retain our own thoughts and feelings, nothing can dishonor us. Don't lose sight of yourself when you're swayed by pain and shame. Wilma should have also gone through similarly painful to describe disgrace and injury, but she retained enough willpower to encourage Carol despite that. You want to see Shogo again, don't you? Hold on to that sentiment and endure as long as you can, my beloved sister Carol. Carol vividly recalled Wilma's expression in that moment. It was hard to believe that was the same woman acting like a pig in the footage. Wilma. Drops of sadness spilled from her pomegranate eyes, silently trailing down her cheeks. Carol cried from the memory of the strong, kind Wilma who was no longer here. She was always going on about the reason we were born or our reason for living, wasn't she? Sandy held Carol's silent, sobbing shoulder like a friend. Suddenly, the hostility laced in her voice as she whispered in Carol's ears gave her goosebumps. So, I told her everything she wanted to know. Sandy whispered, her voice shaking like she was containing a rising laugh. Along with definitive proof, after that it was shockingly easy. She broke in one go. No, I'm pretty sure she threw herself away, yeah. Sandy began cackling with amusement as she recalled that sight. So we gave her a brand new life as a pig. Mama's very grateful to us, you know. I bet it's a lot easier for her to live now that she can stop thinking about everything else. Sandy's irritating laughter wouldn't stop, but Carol didn't rebut her. She currently didn't want to use up any energy on fruitless endeavors. She was now the only one left, so she wanted to conserve her strength solely for enduring what was to come. I never thought the youngest good-for-nothing would be the last one left. You've got quite the spirit, don't you, Carol? Sandy's hand continued past the shoulder it held to grab one of Carol's small breasts. She then groped it like she was devouring its softness. Carol merely bit her lip and endured the unpleasant sensation. She called out softly, weakly, and falteringly, calling for the sole gloomy light at the center of the world. Of her world, rather. I won't lose. The witch Carol continued her lone struggles in the depths of that deep darkness. Now, my cute sister Carol, what kind of play should we entertain you with next? However, the witch Sandy, the one who loved seeing such resistance while crushing it, was also here. Ugh. Okay, and again, more age scenes. I mean, damn. they really dragged this out, didn't they? I mean, most of the shit we're going to be seeing is not going to be stuff like with Sunaga and Brian, which is really awesome. That was a really cool moment. But it's going to be shit like this. Kind of lame at this point. Like, yeah, I get it. It's supposed to have a lot of H scenes, and that's what people pay for. But there's a story here, and I think they are kind of muddying it with too many scenes. There's one thing. There's such thing as too many H scenes in a plot gay. It's not a rogue gay. It's plot gay. It has a plot, and they're really muddying it with just way too many scenes. But at any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and I guess I'm gonna be out of here with Grimm's Hentai Corner. Hopefully we'll be done by tomorrow, or the next day, Saturday. I don't know, if I'll have to do some on Sunday, I will, but we'll try to get this thing completely finished.